Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome to this edition of News and Views. I'm your host, Rob Schofield. There's very little in the world of policy and politics that veteran North Carolina Congressman G.K. Butterfield hasn't seen. Butterfield is an accomplished attorney, former judge and state Supreme Court justice, and a longtime leader of the Congressional Black Caucus. Still, despite these decades of experience, it would be fair to say that the Donald Trump era has been a shock to the congressman. Recently, the congressman joined us from his Washington office to discuss the troubling ways Trump is trying to remake the federal courts, the president's anti-democratic efforts to squelch investigations into Russian interference in our elections, and the parallel efforts of North Carolina legislative leaders to rewrite the state constitution. Well, Congressman G.K. Butterfield, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Crazy times to be a member of Congress. These days you're in such an interesting and in many ways disturbing time in Washington. We've just recently heard that several folks on the far right want to impeach Rod Rosenstein and try to some way perhaps derail the investigations into President Trump. Do you think there's any chance that this could go forward?
Well, first of all, the landscape here in Washington is most unfortunate, to say the least. We're at a crossroads in government. We have a toxic environment unlike anything that we have ever seen in any of our lifetimes. And so we've got to get back to regular order. We've got to become more bipartisan in our approach to governing. A classic example is the impeachment resolution that was dropped by Jim Jordan and Mark Meadows of North Carolina to impeach Mr. Rosenstein. Mr. Rosenstein is a career professional. He's not a Democrat, incidentally. He is a deputy attorney general, and he has a career of service to the American people. And just because he is the direct report for Bob Mueller, some Republicans think that it's time for him to move on so that it can interfere with the Mueller investigation. I condemn the resolution, intend to vote against it if it comes to the floor. But the bigger picture is that we are witnessing a very dysfunctional government right now, and the American people should not tolerate it. The Republicans have come in with an extreme agenda. Every political party has an agenda, but the Republicans now have an extreme agenda that's outside of the mainstream of the American people. And so we're pushing back as hard as we can, and I think the voters are going to push back on Election Day and make a very powerful statement.
One thing that's been striking to me from the distance of being in North Carolina is that at times it seems as if a lot of the Trump agenda kind of hasn't had a whole lot of success. Things are so divisive right now. But one area in which the Republicans have clearly lined up behind the president and are willing to tolerate everything he says and does in order to get what they want is judicial nominations. I know that's mostly a Senate matter, but obviously you're very knowledgeable about that as a former Supreme Court justice in North Carolina. What's your take on that? It feels as if the federal courts are definitely being transformed in a very worrisome way.
Well, I feel very strongly about President Trump's intent to pack the courts with neoconservative judges. He announced it during the campaign, and from the first day of his administration, he has tried to make that happen. We saw it in his first Supreme Court appointment, and now we see it in this appointment. Not only is he trying to get the neoconservative extremists on the U.S. Supreme Court, but the inferior courts, the district court and the circuit courts, he's also packing those courts in unprecedented ways. It doesn't make the headline, but that's probably as alarming as a Supreme Court nominee. Yeah. And so what we need to do is to get back to the way other presidents have done it, both Democrat and Republican, and that is to try to select judges in a bipartisan way, or at least in a partisan way, in a way that the opposing party can vote for the nomination. Ruth Bader Ginsburg, when she was confirmed, for example, the vote was 98-0. Other judges have been confirmed with 97-2 and votes of that nature. That's where we need to go. We don't need a Supreme Court justice confirmation with the 51-49 vote. That doesn't instill confidence in the American people, nor in the proper administration of justice. And so I'm concerned about these judges. I can tell you my Senate Democratic friends are very much engaged in pushing back on the Supreme Court nominee. Judge Kavanaugh is not suited to serve on the Supreme Court. We know much about his philosophy because he has 20-plus years of writings that our staffs are now going through word by word to see where he stands. One thing that stands out very quickly is his position on presidential power. That law should be well settled in the United States growing out of the Nixon years. There was a great controversy during the Nixon era as to whether or not Congress could subpoena records from the Nixon White House. And the U.S. Supreme Court at the time ruled 8-0 that Congress indeed has the power to subpoena records from the executive branch. But through the years, Judge Kavanaugh has condemned that opinion, and we have great fear that he's going to take that philosophy to the Supreme Court should he be confirmed and insist on cloaking the executive, the president, with the immunity and the inability of Congress to subpoena records that may pertain to high crimes and misdemeanors or misconduct in office. And so this is a very important issue, and I appreciate you asking about it.
Another issue that you've sort of taken the leadership on in trying to address in our country is the issue of income inequality. And I know you're co-sponsoring legislation called Raise the Wage Act. Yes. You've also got plans for a jobs and justice tour. Can you talk to us about those efforts?
Well, if there's one thing that I hear when I go back to the district and I spend as much time in my 14 counties as I can, 4 days in Washington and 2.5 days in my counties, one thing I hear repeatedly, and I'm sure I'm going to hear it again this weekend as I travel down to Littleton in Halifax County, and that's not only unemployment, because starting with President Obama and continuing on, we've tackled the unemployment crisis, and now the national unemployment rate is 4%. It's still too high, but that's considered good. African-American unemployment rate is somewhere around 6.5%, and that's moving in the right direction. North Carolina is a bit higher. But what elected officials are not talking about sufficiently is what I call underemployment. So many people are working. They're working 2 jobs, 3 jobs. And so often they are making minimum wage or near minimum wage. The fact is that you cannot make minimum wage in this country, work 40 hours a week, and live above the poverty line. It is not possible. So we need to raise the minimum wage immediately from $7.25 an hour to $15 an hour. Some states have already done it, and I applaud those states for doing it. I call on my legislative friends in North Carolina to confront the minimum wage problem and to raise the state's minimum wage to $15 an hour. But underemployment is the conversation that I want elected officials to have. People are working. Oh, are they working? They're getting up at daybreak. They make their way to their jobs. They make, you know, very low wages. Wages that may have paid $20 or $25 an hour 10 or 15 years ago are now paying $12 an hour. Now, half of what they were paid years ago. That's underemployment. People with master's degrees and college degrees cannot find the jobs that they are suited for, and so they are having to become clerks in stores, making minimum wage, or servers in restaurants, and depending on tips in order to make it. And that's what I call underemployment. That's the challenge that we have. That's what Democrats will do when we go in the majority next year. We're going to talk about not only the minimum wage, not only the other big issues, but we will address underemployment. We've got to raise wages in this country.
We know, obviously, most of your attention is, by nature of your job, is that you have to pay attention to what's going on in Congress. But I know you care dearly about what's going on in the North Carolina state government as well. We're going to have a slate of 6 constitutional amendments proposed for the state ballot this November. Indeed, there was recently a special session of our General Assembly in which legislators seized control of how the language even would appear on the ballot, probably in a way that's going to be very confusing to voters. Voter ID being one of the top issues that will be on the ballot this fall. Any thoughts there?
First of all, Republicans in the North Carolina legislature ought to be absolutely ashamed of themselves, the way they're conducting their business. They would say in response that Democrats were partisan as well and did things to enhance the Democratic position, and that is true. But there are extremes. Anytime you hold elective office and the trust of the people, you can be partisan to a degree, but there comes a time where you must have bipartisanship and decency and not go to the absolute extremes. And the Republicans in the House and Senate in North Carolina have gone to the absolute extremes. For example, the intention to put 6 constitutional amendments on the ballot, none of which are needed. The voter ID one is absolutely not needed. The courts have said that unanimously, that North Carolina's voter ID law has no place because voter fraud doesn't exist in North Carolina. But yet they're putting that on the ballot. They're putting an initiative there to guarantee a constitutional right to hunt and fish. Why does that belong in the state constitution? North Carolinians have had the right to hunt and fish since the beginning of our state. But there's a partisan reason for putting these 6 amendments on the ballot, and that is to excite or incite the Republican base to get them to go out and vote yes on all of the constitutional amendments, hoping that the voter ID proposition would get caught up in the yes vote. It's a very shrewd move. It's despicable, but it's a very shrewd move. The other part is that the legislature realized that they didn't have the right to write the detail on the amendments. They had the right to do the subject and the top line, but the commission, the Constitutional Amendment Commission, has the statutory responsibility to actually write the amendment. And there is some desire on the part of the legislature to take some or all of that power away from the Constitutional Commission. These Republican leaders in North Carolina, and some of them, you know, I have relationships with, and this is not their background. Speaker Tim Moore, for example, I've known Speaker Moore for 30 years. Decent young man when he was a young lawyer down in Kings Mountain and when he went to University of North Carolina. And for some reason, he has been corrupted, or not corrupted, that's too strong of a word. He's been influenced by the neoconservatives, and now he's bringing that philosophy to the state house, and he's running the state legislature into the ground. People realize that, and I think they will have a rude awakening in the November election.
From the feedback I get, there's a general sense increasingly that there's a sort of disgust with these amendments. There's even, I see this hashtag consistently on Twitter now, no on all six or nix all six. So it's conceivable to me, at least, that this may backfire. It'll be a fascinating couple of months that we'll be going through here.
You know, with social media and 24-hour news now, voters cannot be bamboozled. Mm-hmm. I mean, voters are now paying attention. I go into McDonald's in my hometown, for example, when I'm home to get a cup of coffee in the morning and just say hello to my friends there, many of them I grew up with. And let me tell you, these individuals, many of whom are retired now, many are veterans, what they do all day long is to watch the news programs. And they know what's going on, and others know what's going on. And I think everybody's ready to vote in November. You're going to see probably the largest turnout in North Carolina history in the November election, and people are going to express themselves.
Well, thank you for all you do, for the spirit you bring to these fights, and for the watchdog that you role that you play in Washington. And much good luck to you going forward. Thanks. We'll do this again soon, I hope.
Well, we will, and I'm starting my Jobs and Justice tour. I've done one earlier, doing another one in a couple of days, and we're real excited about it, and people are responding. Jobs, everywhere we go, people are talking about jobs and underemployment and justice in the court system. So thank you for allowing me to say these few words to your listeners this morning. Thank you.
Coming up next, one of the General Assembly's strongest critics of the scheme to rewrite our state constitution.